Hello, and welcome to the Campus Bible Study podcast. Campus Bible Study is the Christian University group based at the University of New South Wales. We seek to prayerfully proclaim the crucified Christ as Lord of all, and hope that these weekly podcasts are an edifying encouragement to you, wherever you are tuning in from.
So, John chapter 10, verses 1 to 21. Truly, truly, I say to you, he who does not enter the sheepfold by the door, but climbs in by another way, that man is a thief and a robber. But he who enters by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. To him the gatekeeper opens. The sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. When he has brought out all his own, he goes before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. A stranger they will not follow, but they will flee from him, for they do not know the voice of strangers. This figure of speech Jesus used with them, but they did not understand what he was saying to them. So Jesus again said to them, "Truly, truly, I say to you, I am the door of the sheep. All who came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not listen to them. I am the door. If anyone enters by me, he will be saved, and will go in and out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I came that they may have life and have it abundantly. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. He who is a hired hand and not a shepherd, who does not own the sheep, sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and flees. And the wolf snatches them and scatters them. He flees because he is a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I know my own, and my own know me. Just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. And I have other sheep that are not of this fold. I must bring them also, and they will listen to my voice. So there will be one flock, one shepherd. For this reason, the Father loves me, because I lay down my life, that I may take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have authority to lay it down, and I have authority to take it up again. This charge I have received from my Father." There was again a division among the Jews because of these words. Many of them said, "He has a demon and is insane. Why listen to him?" Others said, "These are not the words of one who is oppressed by a demon. Can a demon open the eyes of the blind?"
Let's pray. Dear God, thank you for this part of the Bible we have in front of us, and we pray you might help us by your Spirit to understand what it says. Amen. Well, when you got out of bed this morning, did you think to yourself, "Look at me, I'm living my best life"? After all, we do live in the most peaceful, wealthy, privileged, safe, and comfortable place, not only in the world, but in comparison to pretty much all of human history as well. And you're here at university to try and have all of that life, aren't you? Are you living your best life? Well, say you weren't living your best life, but you wanted to figure out how you could. Where would you go? Who would you ask? What would you be looking for? Now, there are lots of people and voices claiming that they know the way to the best life. How do you know which ones are worth listening to? How do you know if they're really going to give you the right information? Which voices do we listen to? Taylor Swift, Timothy Chalamet, Rumi, Jordan Peterson, or 5 billion of your closest friends online? Maybe your parents. Or do you listen to yourself and decide what your best life is? Now, to be upfront with you, I'm not going to offer you much advice today on how to live your best life. I'm really sorry to disappoint you. What are we going to do today then? We're going to see that the answer to this question is, Are you living your best life now? The answer is no. You can't live your best life now. I can't live my best life now. And that's what Jesus is saying to us in this passage. But hang on, Ross. Didn't Jesus say in this passage that we just read, I've come to give people life so that people may have life and may have it abundantly? Okay, you're noticing what's going on. You saw it was there. We're going to have to do some hard work to listen to more than just one line of what Jesus has to say, aren't we? Because that's not all he says. So you're here at a Bible talk. Let me tell you a little bit about what to expect. As we look at this passage today, we'll look at a couple of lines or verses at a time. Now, verse is just a particular word that someone chose to describe a small section of the Bible. And they're the little numbers that you can see if you've got a passage in front of you or you can see it on your device. The big numbers, they're called chapters. And the Bible is a book that has books inside it. And we're in a book called the Gospel of John, or John. We'll have some chances as we go to stop and chat to the person next to you. I'll put a question up on the screen, and that'll help us help each other to do some of the hard work in understanding this part of the Bible right here, right now. You see, I want you to experience what we do each week here at the Bible Talks, and how it is that we try and carefully understand what the Bible has to say. So make sure you keep open wherever you can read what we're looking at today. But as we go, it'd be good to examine a few things about how we can get the Bible wrong. So, here we are, lesson one of reading the Bible. Don't just read one verse. See, if we just look at the one verse that Jesus has here, saying, I want everyone to have life and have it abundantly, well, we'll just end up having no idea what he's really saying, or why, and we'll just throw out all that stuff about the sheep, won't we? So I think we can do a better job than that. Do you? We're at point one on your outline there, different voices. And we're going to begin from verse one, where Jesus is speaking. What does he have to say? Truly, truly, I say to you, he who does not enter the sheepfold by the door, but climbs in another way, that man is a thief and a robber. But he who enters by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. To him the gatekeeper opens, and the sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. When he has brought them out all his own, he goes before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. A stranger they will not follow, but they will flee from him, for they do not know the voice of strangers. Okay, what do we have here? Well, Jesus is speaking about farming. Sheep farming, to be very specific. Does this sound like good sheep farming advice to you? Now, I'm from a country town, a farming town myself. I've spent a little bit of time around animals, but not enough to claim to be a shepherd. But I can tell you this, that to me, and I hope to you, this does not sound like good sheep farming advice. So it's time for lesson number two, Bible reading lesson number two, to understand what a part of the Bible is saying, or anything that you read, listen, watch, you need to consider what kind of content it is. Is it a recipe? Is it a police report? Is it a meme? They're very different things, aren't they? So you've got to work out what it is that you're reading and watching and listening to. So what do you think? Is Jesus teaching us how to live our best sheep farming life? Yeah? No. He's using the concept or the idea of sheep farming to explain something, isn't he? It's a metaphor or a word picture, whatever you want to call it. And when we look at some of the details of this agricultural metaphor, we have someone entering by the wrong method and someone entering by the right method. The idea is that the way you enter says something about you. So, if you need to imagine things by closing your eyes, you can do that. Imagine that you're at home, you're at the kitchen bench, and you're enjoying your lunch, and someone comes in through the window. Do you think that they are a friendly person, just harmlessly on their way through? Or is it likely that they're trying to steal your laptop? I think you know that they're probably trying to steal your laptop because they've come in the wrong way. How someone comes into your house is going to show you if they're your friend or your foe. Jesus is contrasting a bad, untrustworthy shepherd and a good, untrustworthy thief and a good, trustworthy shepherd. And what Jesus is saying is revealing something about the nature of life in this world. When we're looking to find what makes for the best life, a lot of it is tied up with the voices that we're listening to. Are they good voices that we can trust? Or are they voices that will ultimately prove unreliable? So Jesus is saying something about sheep recognizing which person is reliable and which person is unreliable. Who's a fake and who's the real deal trustworthy shepherd? Well, we've had a chance to hear what, think about some of what Jesus has said, but what about those who are listening to him? Look at verse 6. This figure of speech Jesus used with them, but they did not understand what he was saying. There you go. It's a figure of speech. We got the validation that we're right in detecting that this was not Jesus' best attempt at sheep farming advice. But we're also not alone in having to work hard at understanding what Jesus is saying. Let's not give up though. Let's keep going. So, what, or better, who is Jesus talking about? If it's a metaphor, who are the thieves and robbers? Who is the shepherd? Who are the sheep? What are we meant to do with this metaphor? We're pointing to, who are these thieves? Well, hopefully Jesus is going to give us some clues as here's another go, saying what he wants to say. Let's read his second attempt. Is it? In verse 7, let's have a look. So Jesus again said to them, "Truly, truly, I say to you, I am the door of the sheep. All who come before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not listen to them. I am the door, and if anyone enters by me, he will be saved, and will go in and out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I came that they may have life and have it abundantly." So Jesus keeps going with the metaphor. It's a similar metaphor, but a bit of extra info, a little bit slightly different. I know we're racing here, but we're up to Bible reading lesson number 3. When something in the Bible is repeated, there are usually differences. So you get to play a game. You get to play spot the difference. And I'm going to give you a chance to do that activity right now. Spot the difference. Here's the question up on the screen. You're going to chat to someone next to you for 30 seconds. What are some differences that you can spot between the two different things that Jesus said? So verses 1 to 5 to 7 to 10. What are some differences you can see? 30 seconds. Or something? I'll bring you back. I noticed three things. Three things that I noticed. You know, I've had more or less or different ones, but these are the three things that I noticed. First, Jesus is now doing a different contrast, isn't he? Between the door and the thieves and the robbers. Okay, that's a bit different. Secondly, Jesus has now started talking in first person, talking about himself, I am. So we know that he's involved in his own metaphor. The next thing that I notice is that Jesus is more descriptive about the intentions of those in the metaphor. Okay, so we've got Jesus who describes himself as a door. It's not very flattering, but it's a metaphor. And he comes with the intentions of saving, finding pasture, that's just grass, giving life, and life that's abundant. Sounds good, right? And then we've got these thieves and robbers. What are their intentions? Look at verse 10 there. It's to steal, kill, and destroy. Not my favorite things. Okay, but why is he saying all of this? Let's try and break it down and crack open this metaphor. If we can figure out who Jesus is talking about in terms of thieves and robbers, we'll get clear on what kind of life Jesus is talking about. We've got to have our veggies and meat before we get our dessert, okay? So, What are some of the options that we have for who the robbers and thieves are? Is he talking about someone behind his back? Or is it someone who is listening to what Jesus is saying in this very passage? So another chance to chat to the person next to you. This is the question. What are some options for who Jesus describes as thieves and robbers? 30 seconds. I would like to be very bold, and I would like to hear your thoughts. So if anyone's brave, you'd like to stick up your hand and suggest some options, we might have.
The Pharisees.
Pharisees. Ooh. Any others? Any other options? Okay, we'll work with those. Yes, I think there's something about Pharisees. Now, that hasn't come up in the passage. Where do they belong? Well, and I'll admit this is a hard question because the information that we needed was not in the passage, but just before it. You see, Jesus was not talking into thin air. He's not talking aimlessly. This is an attack. Jesus' opponents are a group of Jewish religious leaders who don't like what he's doing, they don't like what he's saying, and they think that he's leading people astray, like a bad shepherd leads people away. You can read about it in a passage in this biography that John has written of Jesus that just comes just moments before, just a few verses before. You can go and do that and have a look, and I'll encourage you to do that to kind of get a sense of this. What happens is that Jesus heals a man who's blind, and these Jewish religious leaders that are there, they're annoyed, and they oppose Jesus for doing something kind. These Jewish religious leaders are the best candidates for these metaphorical thieves and robbers. Sure, great. But we need to make a bit of sense about what they have to do with what Jesus is trying to say and about life. And it's actually more than you think. They are completely tied up with this problem that has brought you here today, I think. Am I living my best life? And if I claim that you're not, what have they all got to do with each other? The truth is, isn't it, that we have a vibe of what the best life we could live is. Success, fulfillment, great relationships, connection, feeling like we belong, having freedom, having a good time, getting what I want, having the money so that I can live where I want, travel when I want, learn how I want, eat what I want. But the reality of our lives, the lives that we live, is that they never meet these expectations. Why? Well, what I'm about to say is not something that I made up. This is what you read in the Bible from beginning to end. In the beginning, God gave humanity, that's us, everything we needed to live our best lives now. But people from the beginning, and ever since, have rejected what God gave us and also rejected God. The reality is that we've all played a part in ruining the possibility of being able to live our best lives. And each of us has to live with the consequences of the things that others do as well, that take away our opportunity to live our best lives. And why? The Bible says we've cut ourselves off from the very one who gave us our lives and all the good things that we were meant to enjoy. We were meant to be able to say, thanks. This is such a great life that you've given me to live. But instead we say, stuck you, God. And the global impact of this relational rejection has on our world is so frustrating and annoying and awful. Why does this lady, who spent her life working to help people who are sick, not get the care that she needs to help her when she's sick? See, our world is not the way that we want it to be. And that's because it's not the way that it was meant to be. But God decided to do something about this, to make a way out of this situation. What was the plan? Well, God gave a global mandate to the nation of the ancient people of Israel to fix this problem. But they turned their back on God's plan. And these Jewish religious leaders that Jesus is sparring with, they were the most recent in a long line of people who had turned their back on God's plan. God had essentially asked them to help carry a special privilege of making our world start to work again. But when Jesus came to get on with the job, they got in his way. The biggest issue is that to solve the problem, people need to stop giving God the cold shoulder and stop rejecting him. They need to turn back, to say sorry, and to follow the steps to be back in relationship with God. But these Jewish religious leaders that are speaking with Jesus, they're not helping people to be back in relationship with God. Instead, they're claiming that if you want to live your best life, just keep ignoring God. All of us experience many people and voices claiming that they know the best way to the best life. There's scammers, there's con artists, there's politicians who promise us everything, but they can't deliver. But what about those who've made it? Like, I mean, really made it. Don't they know how to live the best life? I'm talking about those athletes, actors, influencers who've got the money, got the lifestyle, got the freedom, got the fun. But Ross, didn't you say that it wasn't possible for anyone to live their best life now? But these people seem to have it all. Oh, but do they? The problem is, however much you have, it doesn't give you the certainty that you might have. You don't know if they'll have it all tomorrow. You don't know if it'll tear their friends and family apart and ruin relationships. You don't know if it'll feel like they even have enough. The comedian Jim Carrey put it like this: I think everyone should get rich and famous and do everything they've ever dreamed of so that they can see that it's not the answer. The people who might look like they're living their best lives now know that it's not good enough. And they're left wanting more when they're at the top even. And this gets us back to this passage in the Bible: going to the top or going to the bottom. You see, not even Jesus lived his best life. Jesus isn't a great role model of how to live your best life, not in the terms that we think. Jesus seems to think that the life worth living is dying. Okay, we're at point three. Is Jesus living his best life? And have a look at verse 11. From verse 11. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. He who is a hired hand and not a shepherd, who does not own the sheep, sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and flees. And the wolf snatches them and scatters them. He flees because he is a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. Jesus is stating that he is good and he has the sheep's best interests at heart. And in comparison to the others, now framed as the substitute shepherd or the substitute teacher who doesn't really care about who they're meant to be looking after, it gets us back to thinking about the question of people and voices. If we want to figure out the way to live our best life, where do you go to? Who do you listen to? What are you looking for? And I have to warn you, Jesus might be about to make you feel even more uncomfortable. What I mean is that you can really get wrong what kind of life Jesus is offering. So here's the last Bible reading lesson for today. Bible reading lesson number four: don't read into the Bible what you want it to say. While it sounds nice to think that Jesus is saying, oh, when you come to have a relationship with me, I'll give you everything. I'll make you abundantly successful. You have wealth. You have everything you ever wanted, every relationship you could have dreamed of. You'll have all those toxic people out of your life. You'll be able to get to the gym every day. You'll have the body you want, the skin that you want. You'll be happy and healthy. You'll have just the right amount of attention from the people that you really admire. You can just have it all the way you want. It sounds nice to think that Jesus is saying, when you have a relationship with me, you get to live your best life now. But I have to break it to you. That's not what Jesus is offering. Jesus didn't come so you can live your best life now. So we need to think carefully about what the qualifier is that Jesus uses. What is abundance? What is an abundant life? Jesus came to offer not a certain quality of life now, but came to offer a certain quantity of life. I'll say it again. Jesus came to offer not a certain quality of life now, but to offer a certain quantity of life. Okay, let's unpack that by reading Jesus' last saying in this passage. So we're at point four, thinking about Jesus and what he has to offer, and we're at verse 14. I am the good shepherd. I know my own, and my own know me, just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. And I have other sheep that are not of this fold. I must bring them also, and they will listen to my voice. So there will be one flock, one shepherd. For this reason the Father loves me, because I lay down my life that I may take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have authority to lay it down, and I have authority to take it up again. This charge I have received from my Father. Here's the last chance you have to chat with the person next to you. I'm just throwing over to you this question of what does Jesus say that his mission is? What's his life all about? 30 seconds with the person next to you. I won't ask you for the voice, because I'm not going to go thinking, and if we're going to start to piece together what Jesus is saying, he's stopped talking about a contrast here. He just speaks directly about himself, who he is, and his mission. This mission, this plan for his life, was a long way from living his best life. Jesus came pretty much living the worst life he could have. If you keep reading this biography of Jesus, which I really encourage you to do, it includes Jesus being rejected, betrayed, mocked, spat on, laughed at, bashed, stabbed, and results in him hanging dead on a Roman cross, an intentionally humiliating way to kill criminals. That was his plan, to lay down his life, to die. But this wasn't a pointless plan. He put his life on the line for his sheep. And just to get straight to the point, this is talking about how Jesus' death achieved something. Jesus died a special death, a death that had a special purpose. It was a death that killed death. How? Well, he kind of broke the machine, because he didn't stay dead. That's what he's talking about in this passage where he says he has the authority to take up his life again. But if you read the rest of his biography, you'll notice that Jesus doesn't stay dead in the grave. He comes back alive, walking, talking, and claiming to have conquered death. He's now alive forever. And he can reverse the way that death was the last destination to make it instead the entrance to the kind of life that lasts forever. That's what he's talking about when he says, I came so that they may have life and have it abundantly. Jesus' plan, which he smashed out of the park, by the way, was to walk on this planet, die, break the pattern of death, and come back to life again and live forever. This was the plan that God had given to the ancient nation of Israel, and Jesus was the one who accepted it and did it. The life that he's offering to people like you and me is life that lasts. Jesus' love is so great that he would lay down his life for people like you and me. You can't live your best life now, because it won't last. The best life you can live is the one that will actually last. And the only way to get that life is by having a relationship with Jesus. Because he's the only one who can share his lasting life with you, and he's the only one who has lasting life to share. Let me help you understand. Here are my kids. talked about them before. Yeah, really great. But I've got a challenge for you. Which one is which? These are my two children when they were about two months old. And here's the extra challenge for you. Which one? Who's this? Which one? It's a great game. You do like to play it. But I'm going to tell you, there's something very sad about these photos. While me and my wife should have been enjoying playing a game like this, you know, which photo, which kid is which at 2 months old, we were in a really different mood in life. What? Well, my wife was diagnosed with cancer. God didn't give us our best life. But he gave my wife longer life. When she was told that she had a life-threatening illness, if she'd done nothing, she would have died very young. But God let my wife have good treatment. That meant she could enjoy a longer life. You see, she got a quality of life? No. More life. She got a quantity of life. Instead of living a short life, she got to live a longer life. And just to clarify, some people think that if you believe in God and do the right things and give God what he wants, he'll give you a blessed life and you'll get to live something like your best life that you can live and enjoy now. But that's not what the Bible promises. So even though God kindly let my wife have good treatment that meant she could enjoy a longer life, God doesn't promise that he'll give her an amazing life. What Jesus offers my wife and you and me is real life that we can really have on the other side of death. A life that will never end and which will be abundant and also full of all the good things. The kind of life that we were destined for. The kind of life that we all desire. I'll say it again. Jesus offers life on the other side of death that lasts and also has all those things that we really, really want. We've got one last bit of the passage that's going to get us to think about how we respond to Jesus. Look down at verse 19. There was, again, a division among the Jews because of these words. Many of them said, "He has a demon and is insane. Why listen to him?" But others said, "These are not the words of one who's oppressed by a demon. Can a demon open the eyes of the blind?" So are you hearing what Jesus has to say and thinking, he's wrong? He's out of his mind. He's out of touch with reality. Who thinks this stuff's actually true? Well, you need to know then that this life is all there is. Are you living your best life? If you're honest, you'll realize that you're not and you can't. And if you can see the truth about what Jesus is saying, well, that's important. You see, now, if we're not sitting here in a lecture. This is a Bible talk. And the difference is that you can walk out of a lecture and do nothing. You shouldn't do that, but you can. But not with a Bible talk. You have to do something. If you can see the truth about what Jesus is saying, and that life in this world is never going to be our best life because of the things that are ruining that opportunity, don't just ignore what you've heard today. Because you either accept what's on offer, or you leave it on the table. And I thought a great next step is kind of one of the things I've been saying through this, is that you could read more of this. So you might want to grab a Christian friend that you know and read some more parts of the Bible so that you can think further about these things. But if God is helping these things click for you right here, right now, and you need that life that lasts that Jesus is offering, well, I'm going to lead us in a prayer. It's on your outline there. Now, I'll pray out loud, and if you want to, you can follow along with me in turn. God, I can see that I can't live my best life because I and others have rejected you, and this has disrupted and ruined life in this world. I want to have life that lasts forever. I've learned that to have this lasting life, that Jesus offers, I need a relationship with you. Thank you that Jesus came not to live his best life, but to lay down his life and to take it back up again so that I can have life that lasts.
Amen. Thanks for tuning in to the Campus Bible Study podcast this week. Please make sure you are subscribed on your regular podcasting app. You can get in contact with us at campusbiblestudy.org. There, you can also find details about upcoming events and information about partnering with our ministry, both prayerfully and financially.